why should we be concerned about mold?
We should be concerned about mold for a couple of reasons. Mold has always been with us humans on Earth. There's a big interest now in, and there are legitimate health effects. There's no question about it. There's a bit of what I call a hysteria that's involved with this thing. And it's probably good to separate the fact from the fiction, or at least the fact from the not yet proved. You know, it's been in the news specifically with certain major lawsuits. The names Ed McMahon, Bianca Jagger, and Aaron Brockovich come to mind. And there's other cases we can discuss who claim that they've had serious health effects, had to basically tear apart their entire homes to get rid of the mold. And as you pointed out to me off air, there's implications with asthma and other illnesses. So it is a big deal.
Isn't one of the root causes that our homes today, especially new homes, are so tight, so well sealed, and have so few comparatively air changes than we've had in the past, that mold is doing quite well, thank you, because we've created an ideal environment for its growth?
Well, that's exactly right. When the energy crisis came out in the 70s and people started sealing up their homes so effectively, the first thing that came out of it, as you may recall, was this business with radon. Radon obviously is in the air, it's in the ground and so on, but was never really a problem until people were, you know, literally taping their houses shut. And this got into this whole notion of indoor air pollution and sick building syndrome and so on, of which mold is another component. But there's one more thing to keep in mind. Mold requires a very moist environment, usually caused by some sort of leakage, often from a plumbing or ventilation system. So by combining all those factors and possibly other things in the environment, this mold thing has really come to the fore.
Let's talk about the relationship of mold and asthma, especially in the larger context of homes that may not necessarily be safe environments for any number of reasons, not the least of which would be, for example, poor ventilation systems, old paint, dirty carpets. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I mean, if you're talking about mold, asthma, and so on as it relates to the environment, there's no question. There's been studies that have been performed in certain housing projects. Notably, there was a big one in Seattle where they found that, maybe these weren't the best-kept houses in the world. There was rodent material, cockroaches, all the wonderful urban detritus. And many of these kids were affected, especially the children, with asthma. Certainly, not a big surprise, they found mold in many of these environments as well. So there are components, but you know, when you start talking about asthma, you're bringing in a whole host of immunological components here that they have to be looked at.
How can those components be avoided or evaded? What can people do to abate the problem?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, trying to avoid all these reactive substances is essentially impossible. I mean, I suppose you can create a bubble boy type situation, but one of the things that's interesting about the immune system is it essentially reacts to everything. Allergy basically means another reaction. So while we like when the immune system fights off those nasty bugs that infect us, we don't like it when our skin breaks out and we have other reactions. But this is all part of the immune system, and there's literally hundreds of thousands of triggers. So people in the natural health side would say, fine, no problem, just maintain a healthy immune system. But in effect, that begs the question. I mean, everybody wants a healthy immune system, but how do you do that? How do you maintain it? How do you know what's affecting it in a negative sense? For example, there's a number of papers out suggesting that it's actually pretty good for young kids to be exposed to all their friends with colds and illnesses and so on, almost an overkill, because that way the immune system develops and they're less prone to having asthma. So, I mean, I wish there were a guidebook on it, but hard to figure at this point.
So if your child has asthma, what steps, especially as they would relate to your work, can a parent take to not only abate the problem, but stop those, stop the problem, or at least reduce the incidence of the problem occurring?
Okay, well, if you're talking about abating asthma, of course, this is already now a child who is reacting unfavorably to environmental components. So people have achieved good success with various types of air filtration, keeping the house clean, arguably getting rid of pets, and, you know, many of the things around the house that to a kid, unaffected kid, wouldn't be a problem. But again, it should be pointed out that it's nearly impossible to remove everything. And on the subject of mold, the spores are everywhere. The hope is that they don't grow and proliferate, but it's virtually impossible to remove everything. I'd say
so the issue seems to be one of cleanliness and proper ventilation. And of course, at the same time, if parents wouldn't smoke in that environment, that would probably help too.
Well, no doubt about it. Environmental tobacco smoke has been mentioned as obviously for many things, one of which is the sick building syndrome. In fact, environmental tobacco smoke a few years ago seemed to be the easiest way to break a too expensive lease in New York City because, again, with the tight buildings and people were reacting to smoke, whether it's classically an allergy in that it's, you know, IG caused or whatnot, but they definitely react to it. These are the things that can easily be removed. I mean, no doubt, just taking simple steps in remediation is going to help.
Are you called in often to consult with individuals who have mold problems, for example, in single-family residences, apartment houses, or commercial buildings?
Well, we get involved actually in the whole toxic air pollutant type of thing. I mean, we started off being more involved with as sick building syndrome related to carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, and other components that built up in these tight buildings. It was a natural step to get involved with other components, and mold a few years ago, of course, became a big deal. So we tend to get involved actually more with commercial and industrial type environments, but we have occasionally talked to people about residential occupancies as well.
Can you give me a typical, or can you outline what a typical case history of a building that you might be called in on to evaluate?
Sure. There was a case with actually an unnamed government agency, but let's say that they should have known better, because that was what they were charged to do, where they found that because of impossibly stupid design of the ventilation system, they were bringing the clean air in from over a freeway, believe it or not. So the air was often contaminated with carbon monoxide and just vehicular emissions. I guess it would be very expensive to redo the ventilation, so we were called in to see just how bad the CO and other components were. And I have to tell you that 99% of the time, when you get involved in these things, you get the feeling that people are overreacting, but this was not the case here. The levels of these compounds were way too high, and they actually ended up, at least on a short-term basis, shutting off the ventilation and installing what is called a ventilation speaker system, which you might be interested in knowing what that is.
Please tell me about that.
A ventilation speaker system is this, that there's, as you well know, there's psychological effects in how people feel about their environment. So if you were just to shut off all the ventilation and people didn't get that reassuring whoosh sound coming from the ceiling, they'd think that, you know, they're not being properly ventilated. So rather than spend $7.5 million to redo the HVAC system in this building, they instead installed a $25,000 speaker system, and the speakers look suspiciously like ventilation registers, and make, and it's on a timer, so every so often you get the reassuring sound, whoosh, and they had no complaints after that.
Same air?
Same air, yes, sir. But
now, wait a minute.
Well,
now, wait a minute. Aren't we sort of fooling people with an electronic speaker placebo effect into believing that they're getting something that they're not?
Yeah, that's what happened in this particular agency, and this was about 15 years ago. I was sworn to secrecy, so I won't tell you what agency it was, but it was downtown Washington, D.C.
And it had something to do with the environment.
Something like that, yes. And it wasn't EPA, but...
So are you suggesting that there is a component of the sick building syndrome that may have absolutely nothing to do with reality, that has much more to do with perception?
Well, you know, perception is part of reality, isn't it? The trouble is that let's take a simple case. Sometimes, especially when you get to be old like me, over 50, in the evenings you feel cold, right? But then you look at a thermometer and find, my God, it's 71 degrees. Why should I be feeling cold? So sometimes that's reassuring, and sometimes it isn't. I suppose you'd feel better if the thermometer read 58 degrees or something, and then you'd think that you should be. So there's the body tends to react to all kinds of stimuli completely unrelated to this. When I was involved in the music industry, studies seem to show that the ear is not a passive listening device. The ear will add or subtract frequencies based on some preconceived notion of what you think the music is supposed to sound like. So there is a whole field of psychoacoustics, believe it or not, where you can make things sound like you want them to without, you know, actually having that genuine sound portrayed. So this is all part of how we perceive stuff.
Are you suggesting there was a psychoacoustic solution to the speakers that were installed in the building that produced that whooshing sound that reassured people that indeed fresh air was coming in?
It definitely worked. I mean, I don't, you know, we never followed it up because it was such a screwball situation to be involved with that we, you know, didn't have much contact with him after that. But I believe that speaker thing was in effect for a number of years. And then finally... the issue was, I mean, you know, without speaking out of school here, the issue was the way the government works is that the General Services Administration, in effect, is the landlord, and the agency is a tenant. So you get into all nice battles about, you know, who's going to pay for what. And the particular tenant, I shouldn't have said Department of Labor, but the tenant... was having an argument as to who would pay for it. So, you know, they were able to get signature approval, I guess, to at least put in the speaker system, which, here's the effect. I mean, it's very interesting. Suppose you think you don't feel good, but you hear this ventilation going. Then you begin to think, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is psychosomatic. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And maybe then you won't report it. But, you know, if you then get validation from a third party that no, wait a minute, there is something wrong. So it's unbelievable. But if you think about it, the psychological component of health in general is very important. I mean, if you feel good, if you think you should feel good, you usually do. If for some reason you think you should feel bad, or someone tells you, boy, you look peaked, as the expression used to go, chances are you will. I mean, I'll give you one simple example. I was under treatment a number of years ago for some condition, and evidently they screwed up the blood test results that the doctor was looking at were from somebody else.
And you were pregnant, right?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it wasn't that obvious as well, Mike. Boy, it looks like your white count is up, and maybe do you feel sick? And what? And I thought, well, you know, I wasn't. I mean, I didn't feel sick, but as soon as it was suggested. And then this conversation goes on for a few minutes, and then the doctor says, oh, gosh, you're not Mrs. Emma Jones, are you? No, that's not me. So, Power of suggestion.
But the moral of the story would seem to be that if you live in an environment, you should probably pay attention, for example, to where your air comes from.
Oh, yes.
Much like the building next to the highway, if the primary source of the air in your life are those breezes that are deflecting off the skyway into your front room, that's probably an area of concern.
Well, it is, and in the case of this particular government building, they could have literally had a 90% improvement just by taking the air from either higher up or from a different angle or something like that. So it was usually the remediation is very simple.
Right. In terms of that remediation, mold and asthma, if we can kind of wrap up all these thoughts together.
Sure.
You know, what are actions, what are simple actions that people can take now that they're aware of these issues to ameliorate these situations?
Well,
of living in a tight house, it's wintertime, all the windows are closed, there's a certain level of moisture. We've created an ideal situation for mold and asthma, perhaps.
Well, and of course, not just mold. There's two ways to approach this. If you already know you have a problem, then remediation is done where there's environmental assessment is done. You look at the ceiling tiles and the wall board and any cellulose-containing surface, because that's how mold lives. It's essentially a parasitic creature that has to get sustenance from something else. They don't do photosynthesis. And you have to remove water and do all this. But if you're saying, we look at it from the other way, how do we prevent this, or how do we, what do we do to avoid such a situation? One of the easiest things, because remember, and I come back from the air pollution field for so many years, is it's just not a good thing to close up a house that tight. It's just, at some point, there are more important things in life than saving energy. I mean, either you lower this thermostat or you're going to pay a little more, but you've got to keep a window open or something, and that will go a long way. And certainly, if you see leaks or you suspect something or there's some odor coming from behind wallboard, especially in a bathroom, it should be fixed. There's all kinds of gory pictures that were in these journal articles of the Stachybotrys mold, which is the black mold, growing in great profusion on this wallboard. And it not only does it look ugly, I mean, the concentrations can get very high. So, simple cleanliness, prudence around the house, fixing leaks, just doing all the good housekeeping things that people should normally do anyway,
will help solve the problem. You actually described my bathroom to a T.
Uh-oh.
I mean, that black mold in the corners, the deteriorating grout, the loose tiles, the funny little purple spots and green spots on the ceiling. You've described my bathroom.
Well,
so what can I do tomorrow or even later today if I'm ambitious?
If you're ambitious.
To go in there and whack that mold where it lives.
Well, of course, whacking the mold, the first thing that you noticed is were you thinking about it? Did you feel now that you have mold that it's creating these health effects? But, assuming that there's, not some outrageous problem, depends how far you want to go. Sometimes it can be scraped off. Sometimes the wallboard has to be replaced. But ultimately, you might want to look at why the moisture is developing. It's important to know that Stachybotrys requires a prevailing temperature of about 77 degrees, but more importantly, 93% humidity to grow. So there's humidity building up. The other problem is that in many residential, but interestingly not commercial, bathroom fans, in a commercial bathroom fan, the vent goes out the roof. But in most homes built after the 1960s, somebody came up with a brilliant idea that the bathroom fan simply ventilates out into the attic. So depending on conditions, the condensation can be building up, and that is probably what's causing these spots of mold. But it's not doing you any good to have them there. They can be scraped off, painted over, but you got to remove that moisture.
So you're suggesting that people maybe creating their own problems by having ventilation systems that go into the attic. I can imagine what it looks like up there. I mean, the place is probably rotten.
Well, it's true, because if you go in and see all the nice wood studs there, I mean, that's about the best environment for this stuff to grow. Again, as I keep mentioning, you can have all these mold spores, but you have to have moisture. So if you don't have moisture, you won't have a problem. But it's not uncommon to have leaks in homes, and it's not uncommon in a humid environment. I mean, there was a big deal in Texas after one of the hurricanes where suddenly the mold claims went up, you know, so many 1,000%. And that'll do it. Requires that nice moisture. If it's always dry, not a problem.
So if you have mold and you eliminate the source of moisture, will the mold go away?
Okay. The mold will die, but the chemicals that are produced, depending on how much are there, you may still have that dark color, that pigmentation that you don't like the looks of. You know, so to speak, the body is still going to be there. It's not going to reproduce, but I suppose, given time, it'll just dry out and you know, fly off somewhere. But just killing it per se, it's still the stain is going to be there.
Oof. Where can our 125 million listeners per week go for more information?
Okay.
Because I'm sure you've tweaked and piqued their interest.
Well, you know, several sources. If they want to, you know, contact us in just for the more overall toxic pollutant look at things, we have a website, gasdetection.com, because... you know, until the mold thing came up, most of these kind of things that people were interested in, frankly, were toxic gases. Beyond dealing with us, there are a lot of good sources that state health agencies, the feds, CDC, have put up, and most of it is really to try to calm people down that know just because you have mold in your house, you're not going to drop dead tomorrow, sort of thing, but kind of be aware of it. So there's a lot of good public health resources. Certainly, as I mentioned, people are free to go to our website and get information on toxic pollutants. Contact us, and we'll be happy to help.
Well, you're the man, and you're a terrific interview, and I love these case histories. That, you know, the anecdotal stuff is really, really fun.
Well,
and I think brings it home for people.
Well, there's more where that came from. I guess I had to learn something, be out in the field for 25 plus years, you know.
Well, that's easy for you to say.